Information-fueled, opinion-driven. This is the Dan Mandis Show, Supertalk 99.7.
On Supertalk 99.7 WTN, Dan Mandis Show, 615-737-9986. 615-737-WWTN. I'm not sure, Bell, if you've been to the Dan Mandis Show Facebook page, or if anybody has today. I know a lot of people have. I have a story up there that you have got to see. An 18-year-old has now decided that she has an adult baby alter ego to deal with her depression. I kid you not, folks. She's got diapers on, she's got a pacifier in her mouth, and she's living in a crib. It's very funny, and you've got to see it on the Facebook page. I'll tell you more about that in the couple of hours ahead. But this just came down the pike off of Twitter. This is from NBC News. Now, we all know what happened in Antioch with those students who decided that it would be a great thing to come out of class during the 17-minute walkout and jump on cop cars, destroy an American flag, all these things. Well, in Ohio, a student was suspended for refusing to leave the classroom during the gun control walkout. Now, what is it that I've been saying all along about these walkouts, not only the one that we just did and the one that we just dealt with, but also the ones in the next couple of weeks? And that is, what is it leading to as far as a national dialogue? Is it nothing but gun control, gun control, gun control? One of the things that I said is, okay, so the kids have learned how to walk, but what have they actually learned? They've learned how to protest, but what have they actually learned? And it seems to me like the conversation that has been taking place regarding the shootings in Florida, it is all about guns, and they've completely missed the bigger, broader conversation related to mental health and all of the other things that we here on WTN have been discussing with you for weeks now. So this kid, and he is 18 years old, he is a high school student in Hilliard, Ohio, and he said that he didn't want to pick sides in the contentious gun debate surrounding Wednesday's national walkout, so he stayed in class instead of joining the largely anti-gun protest or an alternative study hall. He just said, I'm just going to wait in class. And so you know what they did for Jacob Shoemaker, a high school senior? They slapped him with a suspension. Now, he argued that divisive politics, it has no place in American schools, and he refused to take sides in the debate, according to the Associated Press. Now, on the one hand, I would agree with him, but on the other hand, I actually would very respectfully disagree in the sense that divisive politics does have a place in America's schools as long as both sides are represented and represented fairly and equally. But we know that in schools today, it's mostly about the left side and far less about the right side. So that's the question now. How does this kid deal with the fact that he was suspended? His suspension was posted online, possibly by a friend, and the story has now gone viral. It says the student refused to follow instructions after being warned repeatedly by several administrators. Student not permitted on school property. I mean, can you imagine that? He simply doesn't want to take a part in the protest, and so he wants to stay inside the classroom, and he gets suspended. School district spokesperson Stacy Ratterman says official policy prohibited school officials from leaving Shoemaker unattended in the building for security reasons. While Shoemaker said he did not expect for his actions to generate so much attention online, it has indeed gone viral. He is prepared to accept the consequences of his decision. So that is how one student decided to deal with the walkouts. Listen to this. I don't know if you heard about this. I love what they did in Murrieta, California, during the national walkout. A group of Riverside County high schoolers, they planned their own version of the demonstration. Rather than walking out in the hashtag enough national school walkout, students at Murrieta Valley High School held a, quote, walk up, not out assembly. Now, I love this. They're saying that it was very non-political. And one of the things, and, you know, again, I know that you've heard this before, but people come and go all the time. But one of the big questions that I've had is, what has actually been accomplished with all of these walkouts? You know, I feel like, and I mentioned this weeks ago, I think that these walkouts are a part of a whole thing the left is trying to do, ultimately to make the gun the enemy. And by making the gun the enemy, then that means that they're going to affiliate the gun with conservatives and Republicans. And so what the left is trying to do is they're really trying to foster future voters with these kids. Because what they're trying to do, what the media and the left and all these activist groups are trying to do, is they're trying to paint the left as, and Democrats, obviously, as the more enlightened party. And by being the more enlightened party, then that means that the Republicans must be all the gun-toting Neanderthals, which is, to me, what they've been trying to do. So that's what this is all about. This has nothing to do with the 17 victims. This has everything to do with trying to foster future voters. It's trying to rally all of these teenagers. Hey, everybody, hooray for our side. Hooray for the Democrats. Bad Republicans. Bad Second Amendment. Bad guns. That's what this is all about, among many other things. So in Murrieta, California, they did indeed hold a walk-up, not out, assembly. And the students didn't focus on guns or gun violence at this event. Rather, they focused more on the issue of bullying and including others, generally speaking. They say that students encourage their classmates to, quote, walk up to those who they may see alone on campus and include them in whatever activities they're doing. To walk up to someone and just be nice. One kid says they're making an effort to include kids. They're doing pizza at lunch, things like that. They're just going up and walking up to kids and see if they want to be included in whatever student stuff they're doing. Because I don't know about you, but when I was in high school, just a slight detour, I never was included in all of those wacky high school games because I was always an outsider. I know, shocking.
What are you, Rudolph?
I was like Rudolph. It was. It's always because I had that big red pimple on the top of my nose. It's moving on. I did. I don't know about in high school. For whatever reason, I got to find the picture. I have a picture of me in high school. And for whatever reason, all through high school, it started in eighth grade. I always seem to have this bulbous pimple on the top of my nose. And for whatever, I just could never get rid of the damn thing. I finally started taking tetracycline, and it started to my junior year because I had horrible acne. And so the tetracycline slowly but surely started to take care of my acne. But by then it was way too late. Anyway, back to this story. They say that they're trying to make an effort to include all the kids and all the various things that the school is doing. The 17-minute long event, students were asked to stand for various questions. When asked these two questions, every single kid stood. Question number one, have you ever been bullied? And yeah, every single kid stood. Number two, have you ever had a negative statement made about you online? Again, every single kid stood. Students were also asked if they've ever contemplated harming themselves or about suicide. And yes, indeed, many students also stood up, sadly. And the administrators say that was tough to see because all of these things have been happening there in Murrieta, California. All of these things have been happening right under the noses of the school officials and school administrators. But the problem is a lot of this stuff, and you know the story by now, these kids, they're doing this when they're not in school. And so the school itself has very little control over these kids being bullied online or even being bullied, generally speaking, because a lot of times it happens outside of school. Murrieta students were charged with a task following the event. I love this. Complete 17 acts of kindness towards each other. They say that if one act can make a difference, then 17 can go a long way, the students said. Following the student gathering, those in attendance peacefully returned to class. And so clearly, those students in Murrieta, California, they had an appropriate, quote-unquote, protest. They had an appropriate gathering, and it seems to me like they learned something that can really make a big difference. Because if you think about the shooter, and if you think about the shooters and these kinds of horrific episodes and incidents that we see all across America at more alarming rates than ever before, one of the things that we oftentimes see about these guys is that they are outsiders. They are loners. They feel like they have been excluded from the norm in high school. And so by hopefully including some of these loners in whatever it is that they're looking to do, well, or whatever they're doing, well, then guess what? Maybe, just maybe, they can reach that kid. Now, here's the question. The question is, they've done this event. They've had their walk-up, not out event there in Murrieta, California. How long will it last? Do you think it's going to last a long time? Do you think this is something that will make a not only a positive, but a permanent impression on these kids? One can only hope. It's 1:15 on WTN. Transgender visitor is now suing after prison guards ordered her to strip. Now think about this. He is now a she, but has not gone through everything. So she still has the he stuff down below. And so he goes to visit the transgender woman, quote unquote, tried to visit her incarcerated brother, and has now filed a federal lawsuit claiming that Louisiana prison officers ordered her to remove her underwear and show her genitals before she could leave the facility. Now, I know what you're thinking, but I want you to listen to the entire story before you make the decision that this is just ridiculous. I want you to listen to the whole thing. Donald Nelson, a 48-year-old New Orleans resident who goes by the name China, said in the complaint filed this week that officers at Louisiana State Penitentiary in Angola insisted on searching her vehicle after she refused to undress. Basically, what happens is she goes in and, you know, she's going to visit her brother and, you know, you have to be wanded and you have to, you know, be checked out and make sure you don't have any things that can be transferred to the person in the prison. And, you know, he is dressed like a woman. And so she has male genitalia. So the prison guards are like, well, wait a minute. What is that down there? So they asked her to strip. I mean, I get it, but listen to the rest of the story. Her federal suit against the State Department of Public Safety and Corrections accuses several unnamed prison guards of violating her Fourth Amendment rights against unreasonable searches and seizures. The suit seeks unspecified punitive damages and compensation for Nelson's, quote, emotional distress. It also asks the court for an order barring prison officials from engaging in similar discriminatory conduct. Now, just for the record, I know these are all allegations. Nelson's suit says that guards stopped her from entering the maximum security prison last September after a body screening machine detected a, quote, unknown object in her pants. When an unknown guard stated that she saw, quote, something in Mrs. Nelson's pants, Ms. Nelson acknowledged that she was born a male, as indicated on her driver's license. In an effort to explain the, quote, something the guard stated she saw, one of Nelson's attorneys, Galen Hare, said his client should have been treated the same as any man who was screened for a prison visit. I mean, it's so confusing. So do you want to be treated as a man or a woman? Because if you're transgender and you're dressing up as a woman and you want to use the women's restroom, then that's what you want. But then when it's not convenient for you to be treated as a woman, then all of a sudden you wanted to be treated as a man. Right? They say surely the prison is not strip searching every man who goes through the machine. But again, do you want to be treated as a woman or a man? After two guards escorted her to a men's restroom and instructed her to remove her pants and underwear, she refused and said she would forego the visit and wait in her vehicle while her mother and brother visited her other brother, the suit says. So, just on a side note, so this mom has one son that's transgender and another one in prison. It's got to be a proud moment for the parent. Anyway, moving on. A supervisor and approximately nine other guards insisted on, quote, shaking down the vehicle that she was in, Donald Nelson was in, or China was in, and told Nelson that she would, quote, have to reveal her genitalia before being permitted to leave the premises, the suit states. Now, I want you to think about this, because there is part of me that's like, all right, enough, guards, just enough. She shows up, hey, what's in your pants? She doesn't want to show, and she goes to leave, wants to wait in the car, and then nine guards and a supervisor are all wanting to look at her genitalia and look at the car. So there is a part of me that sounds like this is really piling on. Nelson says that she consented to the search of the car, but again refused to remove her pants and underwear. Prison officials ultimately canceled the visit by Nelson and her mother and brother. Nelson had been on the prison's approved visitor list for 14 years. So they knew who she was. So I guess she feels like he was singled out or being harassed, whatever it is, but never been asked to submit to a strip search before during many of the previous visits. They say, I think this was a new machine or a new screening process in a letter. Now, but on the other side of the coin here, you could also say, well, maybe what they were suspicious of is, Donald Nelson is now China and she may be looking to sneak something into the prison to the brother. So I can see the guard side on this, too. I can. So, I mean, this is one of those stories where you look at it and you say, OK, well, who's right in here? Personally, I think the guards are right in this instance. You either want to be treated as a male or you want to be treated as a female. But you can't have both, can you? In a letter to Nelson last September, a deputy warden informed her that she was suspended from visiting the prison for at least 6 months. The letter, which was provided to the Associated Press by one of Nelson's lawyers, mentions the, quote, unknown object seen on the screening machine and said Nelson refused to be strip searched. Now I'm going to get into really sensitive territory, but I know I've got to take a break and probably I should take a break right about now, because what I'm about to say is, can't they tell on the screening what that unknown object is? I mean, I've never seen what, those parts look like on a screen, but I would assume that it kind of looks like what they look like. They say that security advised you of the shakedown policy and the strip search would be based on your driver's license, the deputy warden wrote back. So he knew what was going to happen when he got there and yet decided to go there anyway. So it almost sounds like a setup, if you will. The letter says Nelson insinuated that officers harassed her because she is transgender. Security tried to explain, but you continued to interrupt. So it sounds like Nelson was being belligerent as well. So it's basically Nelson's word against the prison. But, this is, and I'm sure the truth is somewhere in the middle, but this is one of those instances where, you look at the policy of, say, for example, prisons or government buildings or schools, I mean, you name it, and we have all of this gender confusion and the law is just, they haven't caught up to all of this confusion, and it leads to even more confusion. 123 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Dan Mandy Show. 135 Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Bill, I can't take it. I've got to switch my TV from CNN to Fox News, and I want to fire whoever had it on CNN in the first place. Was it Brian Wilson? No, couldn't be Brian. He used to be on Fox News. Couldn't have been Michael. So, but it's funny, every time I look up on the TV and I see CNN, which I'm changing now to Fox News, thank you very much, because I can feel my IQ, which isn't all that high in the first place, dropping with every second that I'm watching CNN. And they are absolutely obsessed with whatever staffing changes could be on the way in the Trump administration. That's all they're talking about, folks. Now, I don't know what it is that the president is going to do, but the basic headline on CNN is that President Trump is relishing in all of this drama about who's going to be the next to go. And they've got a source from somewhere within the White House, unnamed, of course, that is saying that the president is relishing in all of this drama. Well, there's also a report that the president has said that he is 100% behind John Kelly. So we don't know what the president is about to do. Now, certainly over the past 24 to 48 hours, yours truly has been talking about all of these staffing changes within the Trump administration. Again, word was that John Kelly was out. We, of course, know already what happened to Rex Tillerson. The potential changes described by sources as a bloodbath, supposed to include the departure of National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster. His replacement would be John Bolton. Now, the other thing that I would love to see, and I've mentioned this a couple times now, I'm not going to go on a whole VA thing right now, but replacing David Shulkin, the Veterans Affairs Secretary, with Rick Perry. I think that would be a great move. So there's a lot going on, a lot of what do they call it, palace drama within and palace intrigue within the Trump administration, certainly on CNN. I mean, I kid you not, folks. They've got a panel of six talking about potential changes within the Trump administration, and maybe you missed it yesterday, but you know, I think this is all part of the president just deciding, okay, you know what? I'm a year in. I've got this. I know what I'm doing. And all these folks that I was talked into hiring when I initially was elected president, I don't like working with these folks. Rex Tillerson, the perfect example of what he's been dealing with since day one. Now, for the record, I was one of the first ones to say, listen, you know, if he and Tillerson, if they're not on the same page on North Korea and the Iranian nuclear deal, well, then guess what? Then what needs to happen is he does need to have someone else to kind of help the president row in the direction he wants to go in. And there's nothing wrong with that. And sure, there's been a lot of palace intrigue in year one of the Trump administration. Sure, there's been a lot of turnover. But you know what? Turnover is not always bad. And if the president has now decided, okay, I want people in my cabinet that are on my side and are not going to give me pushback. And here's who I want where, because doggone it, this is what I want to see happen. And I want people that are going to respect me. And for example, Rex Tillerson, we know that it was major media reports that Tillerson called the president a moron. And if there's any truth to that, well, then I'm surprised that it took the president this long to fire Tillerson. But that's all beside the point. So we do have CNN, a lot of other folks saying that there is a looming bloodbath. And you know, a lot of folks said that this bloodbath was supposed to happen today. Really don't know. We'll have to see what happens. You know, it's interesting talking about, and this whole thing came down during my show yesterday, literally came down this bridge that collapsed in Florida. Coming up at about 2:05, going to tell you about some of the things that we're finding out about the companies that built that bridge. When I tell you, I mean, we keep talking about this. It's like deja vu all over again, right? When I tell you some of the violations that the companies that built this bridge have had leveled against them, yet somehow somebody hired these companies to build this bridge that came crashing down on people as they were sitting there waiting at a red light, you're going to be floored. You're going to be disgusted. You're going to be appalled. And unfortunately, you may or may not be surprised. But boy, what it really does tell you is the sanctity of life. I mean, when you think about sometimes the random nature of the way people die and the random nature of how some people meet an untimely demise or a random act of violence or a random act of nature or a random act of neglect as it comes to building this bridge, and how people fall victim to all of the above. If it doesn't make you appreciate the sanctity of life, I don't know what will. Because the people who had the 950 tons or whatever it is of concrete just falling on you, the people who were buried in that rubble, We're waiting at a red light. Waiting at a red light. Had they left the house 30 seconds earlier or 30 seconds later, they would have survived. And somebody else would have been killed. So it's an amazing story. We're going to talk about that straight ahead here on WTN. Speaking of random, did you see what happened to A.J. Foyt? Now, this is a guy who is a big-time race car driver, right? He has now been hospitalized because he was attacked by a swarm of Africanized killer bees on his Texas ranch. I'm serious. Have I ever told you about my rather weird, strange fear of killer bees? When I was very young, I don't know what my parents were thinking, but they sat me in front of the TV at the tender age of whatever it was, 8 or 9 years old, and they put me in front of the movie The Swarm that was on TV. And I've had this really weird fear of bees ever since. So I saw this and I thought, okay, this is something that I have to share with folks. A.J. Foyt, you know, a guy who I'm sure at some point he was hospitalized in his racing career, but he survived his racing career. And now he gets attacked by killer bees. Apparently, the four-time Indianapolis 500 champion was working with a bulldozer when he disturbed the beehives and instigated the response. It was the second time Foyt caused the same type of incident, the first coming in 2005 when he was stung 200 times in the head. Yeah, that's why I have this weird thing about killer bees. I have a weird thing about stinging bugs and what do you call it? It's insects, stinging insects, generally speaking anyway. I think I've told the story. I was driving down the road one day and there's a damn wasp in my car. And I'm driving down the freeway, and this damn wasp is just flying around in my car. And so I'm just, going back and forth, and people are thinking I'm drunk driving, whatever. I finally was able to pull over and, you know, flee out of my car, and I've got my hands going around my head trying to bat the wasp away. Good Lord, it's amazing it didn't cause an accident. He was stung 200 times in the head back in 2005. A fact his racing team made light of on its website, noting A.J. Foyt versus killer bees. Foyt 2, bees nothing, because he has indeed survived this. This was the second time he's been attacked by killer bees. A.J. Foyt Racing said in a statement that he was released from a Texas hospital once he was stabilized. Can you just imagine getting stung 200 times? The team said this second bee attack was more serious than the first, because the first encounter made Foyt more sensitive to bee stings. He's going to miss this weekend's 12 hours of Sebring. He was scheduled to be inducted into Sebring's Hall of Fame on Friday night and was scheduled to be the grand marshal for Saturday's race. He says that he felt like he's been in a fight with Mike Tyson and lost. Right now he's on so much medication that he's not feeling that great, so he says, I'll take the doctor's advice and rest the next couple of days. And he was also, by the way, battling his staff. How old is A.J. Foyt? Hey, Bell, do me a favor and Google how old is A.J. Foyt. Because I'm just curious. And they're not saying specifically how many bee stings that he had. But that is just freaky. And for him to, back in 2005, survive 200 bee stings to the head. What's worse, that or listening to Hillary Clinton speeches? Anyway, it's 1:45 on WTN. Okay, now earlier we were talking about Katy Perry, and we were talking about how she and this guy who was on the guy's name is Benjamin Glaze, and you remember the story, Katy Perry and Benjamin Glaze, they shared a kiss, and Katy Perry is a
83.
A.J. Foyt is 83 years old. Oh, my God. That is amazing. And he survives a whole bunch of bee stings. So, you know, back in 2005, he was 71. At the age of 71, A.J. Foyt survived 200 bee stings to the head. That is pretty impressive. Anyway, so Katy Perry. I told you earlier in the week the story of Katy Perry and this guy Benjamin Glaze. And Katy Perry, of course, is a judge on American Idol, and Benjamin Glaze comes out, and he tells the story of how he has never been in a relationship, and so he has never kissed a girl. He's 19 years old, and he's never kissed a girl, and so Here is what a lot of people have been talking about, and the storyline does continue today. I'm going to give you the very latest, but here's the audio, because this guy, he wanted to make sure that his first kiss at the age of 19 years old, he wanted to make sure that his first kiss on the lips was with someone that he was in a relationship with. And for whatever reason, Katy Perry decided to destroy that dream of his regarding his first kiss. Here's how the whole thing played out.
Come on.
Have you kissed a girl and liked it?
No, I've never been in a relationship.
Really?
I can't kiss a girl without being in a relationship.
Come here, buddy.
Wait, hold on.
Come here right now.
This is, okay. You can't
come
be.
Here right
come
now.
On, I gotta get no, way
is. Come here.
Stop.
What, on the cheek?
Mm-hmm. You didn't even make the smush sound.
Let me start over. Okay.
Oh!
Yeah.
It went down.
No!
Did you get it?
Now the reason why I wanted to play the whole thing for you is because of the fact that he first kissed her on the cheek, and then she said, do it again. Second time, she turns her head so that he would kiss her right there on the lips. Now, I'm very cynical about these things, and I assume that the whole thing was set up with the producers. But that being said, a lot of people are coming out against Katy Perry. First of all, Benjamin Glaze, the 19-year-old, he gave a lackluster performance and everybody moved on. For Glaze, he says a couple of different things. One of the things that he said was he was kind of upset about this whole thing, but he also said that it's bringing attention to his music. But RedState.com, Brandon Morse has this to say about Katy Perry with the headline. And, you know, some of this stuff, to be perfectly honest, it's so incredibly obvious, but it does drive home a bigger point. The headline is Katy Perry proves there is a sexist double standard with an unwanted hashtag Me Too worthy kiss. He says, let's get the obvious out of the way here. If Perry were a 33-year-old man and Glaze a 19-year-old female, Perry would be hauled off the set and told never to return. Article on article would be written about Perry's disgusting advancement on a pure, innocent girl and taking something from her that she cherished. Hashtags would boot up, Predator Perry, for example, and the hashtag Me Too movement would find new life. But Morse pointing out what all of us have been pointing out, which is that's not going to happen here because Katy Perry, in case you haven't noticed, I have, she is a woman. And taking away something a boy cherished was apparently something the network thought was something they should celebrate, because they posted it everywhere, put it in promos and so forth. Her co-host cheered, and the moment was put up on YouTube, a massive supporter of social causes by the American Idol YouTube account. Now, Glaze, for his part, he has been talking, saying that I was a tad bit uncomfortable. He told the New York Times, I wanted to save it, that kiss, for my first relationship. He says, I wanted it to be special. He says, would I have done it if she said, would you kiss me? He says, no, I would have said no. He said, I know a lot of guys would be like, heck yeah, but for me, I was raised in a conservative family and I was uncomfortable immediately. He says, I wanted my first kiss to be special. And Morris again points out the obvious double standard of sexual harassment aside. Perry thought that she was entitled to his first kiss, something he had said was very special to him before she took it. She thought herself important enough to just steal it via trickery, then literally celebrate herself doing it afterwards. He says, then the move was celebrated not just by Perry and her co-host, but by the network and the show, who proudly displayed it on social media. He wraps it up by saying, hopefully the American people understand that if it's not right for one group, then it's not right for the other. And it's all about the double standard. And again, we talked about this earlier this week. I'm very, and I mean very, suspicious that I'm sure this thing was all set up in advance, because Blake Shelton asked the question, have you ever kissed a girl and you liked it? Now, I don't know what was leading up to the whole thing, but it just sounds like a setup. And that is what it was. And again, for Benjamin Glaze, his music, as he has said in subsequent interviews, he has said, now people are hearing my music, so I guess it wasn't all that bad. But I think the bigger point of the whole hashtag MeToo movement is that it is hypocritical, to say the least. It is 150 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. 157 Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Dan Mandis Show, 615-737-9986. One of the topics that I thought, this was way back when, that I thought was just, you know, we have some topics on the radio station during my show and others that we feel are really important. And then there's some that we think we gotta fill like a minute or whatever. A while back, I had a topic that I thought was just something that I had to fill for a minute or two, and I needed something to get into the news. And it was talking about veterinarians and the fact that there was this debate within that industry as to how much to charge people for their sick pets. And if they could save their sick pets, even for a month or two, is it worth it? And is it ethical to charge those people whose pets are eventually going to die tens of thousands of dollars to save their pets only for a couple of months? Well, that debate is raging on after a cat owner has now spent $19,000 on a surgery for her 17-year-old pet. I'll talk to you about this and a couple of other stories making the news today, including why that bridge came falling down in Florida. That story as well, straight ahead here on Super Talk 99.7 WTN.